TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Global seed companies, who owns what? And why are multinational chemical companies in control? Professor Philip Howard. Once a year for the last 3 years, I have brought you reports from the Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California. When they opened for the first time in 2011, I was amazed and touched that over 10,000 people came to a new event and one about something as small and humble as seeds. Many children today answer the question, where food comes from, by naming their local supermarket. How much harder is it to imagine the tiny seed that gives rise to a tomato or an eggplant when they lie encased in plastic in the vegetable section? The Seed Expo focuses on heirloom seeds in strong opposition to genetically modified seeds, and even at critical distance to hybrid seeds that are propagated under controlled breeding conditions. Heirlooms are the wild and ancient ones that predate them all. They're open-pollinated through wind, insects, or birds. They breed true to their parent plant, and their seeds can be saved and replanted indefinitely. And they carry inside their tiny kernel the vast genetic variety, local adaptation, resistance to bad weather or disease that is lost in genetic manipulation or imposed uniformity. Heirlooms are becoming extinct because the seed companies that offered them for sale or distribution are being crushed or bought up by large corporations. And the last seed keepers of traditional societies, or the seed savers and local breeders of farm communities, are dying, often with no one to continue their work. Heirloom seeds provided nourishment for all humans up into the last few decades. And not very long ago, they guaranteed economic survival of farmers, because we all once had the right, and some argue the duty, to save seeds and replant them for the next harvest and future generations. Genetic engineering, the patenting of seeds, sanctioned by Supreme Court and global trade jurisdiction, now make the saving of an increasingly larger part of the world's seed inheritance illegal. That's combined with the expanding control over the global commercial seed supply, mostly by chemical corporations such as Monsanto, DuPont, and Syngenta. Through mergers and acquisitions over just the past 3 decades, a few corporations have bought up most seed companies. According to Professor Philip Howard, there were over 10,000 seed companies in the 1970s. By 1998, there were only 1,500 left. In that process, they almost always discarded much of the stock of seeds held by these small companies in favor of focusing on the seeds that promised the highest monetary return. Dr. Phil Howard was one of the speakers at the 2013 Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California. I made a special effort to record him because I had always hoped that someone would clearly graph out which corporations are now in control of the seed supply, how they did it, and how they bend laws and patent rights for their purpose. In a moment, you will hear a fascinating close-up report on the world's largest seed corporations. Dr. Phil Howard teaches courses in community, food, and agriculture at Michigan State University. He's one of the leading researchers into food systems, tracing the journey of food from farming, processing, and distribution to our plates at home. He spoke on September 11, 2013. As background for this talk, he used a diligently researched graph that showed in detail the names of hundreds of seed companies that were taken over by an increasingly smaller number of corporations. You can find this graph by putting his name, Phil Howard, into a search engine. And you can follow along this talk by opening the Information Graphics section on his Michigan State University website. He is Professor Phil Howard.
Seeds are the foundation of all life. I mean, we become pretty disassociated from where our food comes from in this country, and we sometimes forget that seeds are the most important step in the food chain. And this industry has changed really dramatically. In the 1970s, most seed companies were small mom-and-pop operations. There were more than 10,000 of them. In 1970, there was a Plant Variety Protection Act that gave patent-like protections on seeds, and this triggered a wave of consolidation. Corporations started coming in and buying up these smaller seed companies, including a lot of oil companies, and they first focused on corn seed companies. And by 1985, we were down to 7,000 seed companies in the United States, and by 1998, we had just 1,500 seed companies. About every few months, you'll see a headline like one of these. There's been another big buyout in the seed industry. And even people in the industry sometimes have trouble keeping track of all these and figuring out what's the big picture. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about, first, the question of who owns what. And then second, I'm going to talk about why this consolidation is happening. And then third, what does this mean for us? So let's start with the first question, who owns what? This is the first frame of an animation that's available on my website. All of those blue dots are seed companies. There are more than 200 of them. And the first frame starts in 1996. And it goes all the way till 2008. You can see some red dots. Those are chemical companies. This was the situation in 1996. Here's 2008. All of those formerly independent companies were acquired by these top 10 seed companies. This happened really fast. This was 2008. It's now 2013. Where are we at now? This is what it looks like as of last week. The period from 1996 to 2013, all of these acquisitions have taken place. Not only is this happening faster, but these trends are accelerating in other ways. Number one, it's not just commodities like corn and soybeans anymore. It's extending to all seeds, including fruits and vegetables. Number two, it's not just the United States where we're seeing this consolidation. This is global. And a lot of these acquisitions are occurring in places like India, China, Brazil, South Africa. The third change is that it's not just seed companies. Who are the three biggest seed companies in the world? They're also chemical companies, Monsanto, DuPont, and Syngenta. So the global seed industry is now worth about $35 billion. And the share of these top firms has changed dramatically. In 1996, those top three firms had 22% of the global market. By 2011, a few years ago, they had gained more than half the global market. So I'm going to talk about those top companies, not all of every move they made, but just some of their general strategies. And I'll start with Monsanto. Rob Fraley, former head of the seed division of Monsanto. Some of you may have heard this very famous quote of his. It says, "What you are seeing is not just a consolidation of seed companies, it's really a consolidation of the entire food chain." And he said this in 1996. So what have they done since then? They've made more than 50 acquisitions of seed companies. And just to give you a sense of what he meant by it's a consolidation of the entire food chain, one of the companies they acquired was Cargill Seed Division. Cargill saw all the patents that Monsanto was developing in the early 90s and realized they were not going to be able to compete. So they sold their global seed division to Monsanto. They sold their North American seed division to Dow. And then they entered into joint ventures with Monsanto so that Monsanto controls the seed and Cargill controls the processing so that they would be able to gain control of the food system from seed to shelf. So Monsanto's market share as of 2011 is 26%. And it's really staggering to think about this company was not involved in seeds in the mid-1980s. Then they started buying up all these companies, and now they control a quarter of the global commercial seed supply. One of the other strategies they're using is they formed a holding company called American Seeds Incorporated, and they bought up dozens and dozens of small regional corn and soybean companies. So that gave Monsanto access to their locally adapted germplasm so they could insert their genetically engineered traits. And it also gives farmers this illusion of choice. If you go to the websites and the seed dealers for a lot of these brands, you won't have any indication that they're just a subsidiary of Monsanto now. And Monsanto's been pretty successful with this. They've gone from 0% genetically engineered seeds in the United States to what they claim was 99% of soybeans in just over 10 years. It's probably a little less than that. And 70% of corn, and it's definitely more than that now. It's well above 80%. So by using these patented genetically engineered seeds and convincing farmers to buy them, they've been able to dominate the seed industry to the extent that, you know, they're still a chemical company, but 85% of their revenues are now from seeds. And I mentioned it's not just corn and soybeans. They've been buying fruit and vegetable companies. At the very beginning of this period, they acquired Seminis. Now, this was a result of a Mexican billionaire foreseeing that the patents on genetically engineered commodities would eventually be extended to fruits and vegetables. He was correct in this. He started buying up all these fruit and vegetable seed companies so that by the time Monsanto acquired them, they took over almost 40% of the U.S. fruit and vegetable seed market and more than 20% globally. And they paid $1.4 billion for Seminis, an incredible amount, but they see benefits in the future because they will have the market power to keep raising prices. A few years later, they bought De Ruiter, a Dutch fruit and vegetable seed company, and they paid nearly $1 billion for that company. And so what are some of the impacts? I'll get to more of those later, but Seminis, this is from Matthew Dillon of the Organic Seed Alliance. He found a seed packet for a hybrid tomato, big beef tomato. This is not genetically engineered, but genetically engineered seeds, farmers who buy them have to sign an agreement that they will not save seeds. Well, Seminis is putting on the back of this package of hybrid tomatoes, by opening this container, you agree not to save any seeds, not to use any material for breeding, research, seed production, etc. So they're using the precedent they set with genetic engineering to extend it to everything. I just briefly want to mention BASF, another chemical company, one of these big six chemical companies that's involved in the seed industry. Now, they are no longer involved in direct seed sales. They used to be. But they're on here because they develop seed technologies that they license to other companies. And they have a joint venture with Monsanto. They're both investing billions of dollars to develop what they call stress-tolerant, climate-ready crops, traits like drought tolerance. Now, this is definitely much more hype than reality at this point, but these two companies, Monsanto, BASF, and along with DuPont, now control more than two-thirds of the patents related to these types of seeds. The second-ranked seed company in the world, another chemical company, is DuPont. They got in the seed business in the late 90s. They bought Pioneer, which was the world's largest seed company at that time. They paid more than $9 billion. They now have 18.2% share of the global seed market. They've not been as active in acquisitions as Monsanto. What they tried for a time was instead of buying up these regional seed companies, they entered into alliances with them. And I guess that strategy has not been as successful as they hoped, because just in the past few years, they started up buying up all those companies that they had alliances with. The third-ranked seed company in the world is Syngenta, and this is a result of a number of mergers between Swiss and British chemical companies. There were four different chemical companies that merged to eventually form Syngenta, which has a 9.2% market share. And one of the things that I was kind of optimistic about in the last few years, DuPont tried to acquire Panar Seeds in South Africa. and a result of people like us and people in South Africa saying, this gives too much power to DuPont and Monsanto, which would have a monopoly over the seed market, the government tried to stop it, the South African government. But that's been going through the courts for over 3 years, and eventually, after appeals and decisions, DuPont was allowed to acquire Panner Seeds. So some bad news there. Syngenta, what they've done is a fairly deep, I mentioned how this is the precedents of genetic engineering are being extended to everything. They were one of the first to do this. They created a hybrid barley, not genetically engineered in the United Kingdom, but we, you know, with the Roundup Ready seeds, they're often tied to proprietary chemicals. Syngenta decided to do the same thing with a conventional hybrid barley seed. It was a little bit more susceptible to fungus, so they told farmers, if you buy our conventional seed, you are required to buy our proprietary fungicide.
You are listening to a talk by Professor Phil Howard of Michigan State University, recorded on September 11, 2013. He's describing the corporations that are buying up the world's seed supply by mergers and acquisitions. The three largest corporations, Monsanto, DuPont, and Syngenta, are all chemical companies. The next one in size, Limagrain, a farmers' co-op based in France, is the first non-chemical company down this list. Even though Limagrain is the fourth largest seed company in the world, they, along with Land O'Lakes and KWS, are taking less than 10% of the global share. Back to Professor Phil Howard.
Limagrain also has joint ventures with the fifth largest seed company, Land O'Lakes, which is a U.S. farmer cooperative, with KWS, which is a German farmer cooperative. They actually do joint ventures with KWS, and with one of them, but they've been buying up seed companies in the United States. Those companies have a 3.9 and 3.6 market share, so all of these are far behind those big three chemical companies in terms of global market share. Limagrain also has a joint venture with Dow. Then there's Bayer, way down the list at number 7. They weren't even in the seed industry until 2002 with one of their purchases, and they're a result of mergers between German and French chemical companies. Some of the companies that combined eventually form Bayer. They have a 3.3% global market share, pretty active in acquisitions despite their smaller market share, and they've been really dominant in cotton seeds. One of the companies they now own is Stoneville, which twice before was owned by Monsanto. Monsanto bought it and sold it twice, the last time as a condition of antitrust concerns. So instead of the big chemical company Monsanto owning it, the government said, let's have the big chemical company Bayer own that cottonseed company. The 8th-ranked company is Dow. Their agrochemical division is based in Indiana. And they've been pretty active in acquisitions as well, 3.1% market share globally. And I mentioned they have a joint venture with Limagrain. So those are the top eight. And here's the big picture again. And this actually kind of understates the amount of consolidation that's occurred when you think about the cross-licensing agreements. These big six chemical companies all have agreements with each other. If one company has this genetically engineered trait and another has a different one, they allow each other to use those, to stack them up in crops like corn and soybeans. And the result is basically what the ETC group calls non-merger mergers. This is a cartel. As long as conventional farmers want to keep buying these seeds, smaller seed companies don't have access to these genetically engineered traits because they're very expensive to develop. So the ones who are already doing it have said, let's keep everybody else out. We'll share our technology. And these smaller seed companies have no choice but to either be acquired by these big companies or to form an alliance with them to access those genetically engineered traits, because you saw how many farmers are willing to buy them. Now, they don't always get along. Here's a chart from a guy who used to work for DuPont. He was in their competitive intelligence group, and after he left DuPont, he mapped out all of the lawsuits that are flying back and forth between these big six chemical companies. The most interesting is the battle between DuPont and Monsanto. Remember, DuPont used to be the world's number one seed company, and they've continued to increase their market share, but they've fallen behind Monsanto. So they went to the Department of Justice and complained about anti-competitive behavior that Monsanto was engaging in, basically going to members of this cartel and saying, let's keep prices high, we'll all benefit. So they spilled the beans to the Department of Justice, which launched an investigation, and they spent a few years, and it went nowhere. They just quietly dropped it. Also during that time, DuPont was actually funding a nonprofit called the Organization for Competitive Markets, a group that was trying to force the Department of Justice to do more to keep Monsanto in line. But it appears that these two companies have worked out some of their differences, and that's why the Department of Justice has not devoting any energy to this right now. So why is this happening? I'm going to talk about three reasons. The first, anybody played the game of Monopoly? Nobody? So you know from playing Monopoly how initial benefits can kind of snowball. The big get bigger. And this definitely happens in the seed industry. The bigger they are economically, the more power they have to take profits from one division and use those to drive out competitors in another division. They also have a lot of political power the bigger they get. You probably all know about the revolving door between Monsanto and the U.S. government. And it's not just Monsanto. It's all these seed companies. They're able to shape government regulations in a way that benefit the biggest companies and hurt the smaller companies. So the second reason this is happening, a lot of industries tend towards the factory model. And that's very difficult to do in agriculture in a lot of cases because you have weather and you need extensive amounts of land and you can't just force plants to act like they're in a factory. But there are some things that have been changing that make it easier to apply this factory model. One are these patent protections and patent-like protections that prevent farmers from saving their seeds and force them to go back to the companies year after year to buy them. There are also biological ways they can do that. The earliest was with hybrid seeds, like in corn. Farmers, for a while, could legally save those, but because they didn't breed true, there was kind of a disincentive to do that. Now you know about terminator technology and traitor technology. Those have been developed, but they haven't been commercialized. But you know, any day, these companies could back out of their agreements to keep those off the market and introduce technologies that biologically prevent farmers from saving seeds. And the third is what Willard Cochran calls the treadmill. I mean, why do farmers contribute to this process? Why do they keep buying seeds from these type of companies? Well, part of it is there's a tendency as you produce more, the prices tend to go down. So that means every year, just to make the same income, you have to produce more and more. So that makes farmers very susceptible to hype about chemicals and seeds that are supposed to increase yields, increase the amount of production. And when they start buying these inputs, there are other treadmills. You probably heard about the pesticide treadmill. As you buy more pesticides, the population of susceptible pests decreases, and then you have to apply and buy more and more pesticides every year. The result of all these treadmills is that a typical farmer will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars just to make a net income of less than $20,000. So they're spending all this money that's going to seed companies, chemical companies, machinery companies, but they're not really benefiting from this process. So what does this mean for us? I mean, this is the most important question. Here's what's happening. Prices are going up. It's not surprising when a handful of companies control the global seed supply, they take advantage of that by raising prices. And studies that have looked at a handful of different commodities have found that prices have increased between 200 and 500% in the last 15 years. Another thing that happens is rates of replanting go down. This has been the case in corn for a long time, but it happened very quickly in soybeans. Nobody can save their soybeans anymore as long as they're buying these genetically engineered traits. And even the infrastructure for seed saving is disappearing. The knowledge of how to save those seeds is disappearing. And the goal is to extend this to all those other seeds. Innovation is going down. these seed companies are only investing in what they see will give them blockbuster profits. So they're not going to invest in innovating in seeds that are locally adapted, seeds that are responsive to organic inputs instead of their inputs. And as a result, we have a lot less innovation than we used to. Diversity. One of the things Seminis did right before they were acquired by Monsanto was they dropped 2,000 seed varieties from their catalog. About 25% of all the seeds they sell, they got rid of because they wanted to focus on the most profitable varieties. And that means that we couldn't access some of those less profitable varieties. And one of the reasons they did that was to pay for all the acquisitions that they made to become this huge fruit and vegetable seed giant. So those are the things that are impacting us. And just to recap here, I've talked about who owns what, the strategies these big chemical companies are using to control our global seed supply. Then I talked briefly about why these trends are happening and how they're affecting us. So let me conclude by just really encouraging you to keep spreading the word about these issues. Make sure that more people know about them, because the more people know about corporate efforts to control our food supply, the less successful they're going to be in this effort. Thanks.
That was Professor Phil Howard from Michigan State University, recorded on September 11, 2013, at the 3rd Annual Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California. Please follow his advice. Visit his website by putting his name, Phil Howard, into a search engine. Or come back to the website for tucradio.org. for a free download of this program. There you can also find a link to the animated graphic by Phil Howard that shows the corporate players, their size, and the most important seed companies that they bought up. There were over 10,000 seed companies in the 1970s. By 1998, there were only 1,500 left. You can get information how to get a CD at cost of global seed companies by calling 1-707-463-2654, and I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation on TUC's website keeps this program on the air. That's tucradio.org or 707-463-2654. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.